Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, on this rather difficult day of Erev Tisha B'Av, is daf Kuf Mem Vav, which is really the daf for Tisha B'Av itself. And we shall begin with a special word from our Kapitan, Lechvod the Moed, that is coming. Shover adam et achavit lechol himenu grogrot. Ubevat shaloit kaven lasot kli. You would be allowed to break open a barrel that is filled with the dried figs. Now, we're not sure yet what that means. Are these loose dried figs? Are these packed dried figs? We'll see. Why would there be a difference? Don't know. Why would we say grogrot of all things? I mean, you know, it could be a barrel of wine. It could be a barrel of stam of pirot. If you mention grogrot, you must be trying to say something. We'll see what that might be. As long as bevat shaloit kaven lasot kli, as long as when you're smashing this thing, you're cutting off the top and so on, your kavona is not to make a beautiful kli that has now a usable mouth. Now, this has tremendous implications nowadays for the famous big problem of opening the bottles with the bottle caps, because that is an asiyas kli, because you're tearing off the sides of the metallic or the plastic pieces, and has to do with the way this sugya is going to develop. Now, Tosfos understands, and this is the way that we paskin, that the shover adam et achavit is specifically talking about a chavit, meaning it's a low, low-quality type of kli. It's not talking about a well-made, full porcelain barrel. It's talking about the type of thing that was put together from mustafi, which is junk. And we're going to see this is really a sugya in Beitza, which discusses the type of kelim. I just wanted to put you on notice that we can't jump to any conclusions because of the possibility of Tosfos' approach. And in fact, we're actually makbid on that. So the important thing is that it shouldn't be done carefully to make a nice opening. The ein nokvin megufa shel chavit. Furthermore, you can't make a hole through the actual cover, the bung that you use on the chavis. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Again, we'll see in the Gemara what this is all about. V'chachamim matirin. So over there, if you're going to make a hole in the bung, so because of that, it would be similar to makib patish, Rashi implies. And the chachamim say, that's not a problem because it's not normal. If you want to open up a chavis, what you normally do is you take off the bung. So therefore, this is not considered to be makib patish. Whoever saw a barrel like that? And therefore, it's mutter. V'loik vena mitzida, but everybody's meida, you can't make a hole in the side. Now, it's not clear what the side means. Is that the side of the barrel, or is that referring to the side of the bung? The imaitanekuva, now suppose there was a hole that you had used to get the wine out before, whatever, and you wanted to now close up the hole. Do not use wax. Lo yiten alea shava mipdei shehu mimareach. Because if you do, then you have to press in the wax. You smooth it around the opening. But if you do that, you're going to be over on miricha, which is basically one of the lamed tes melachas, right? Because what you're doing, we learn out from the or, and or, the name of the melacha is mimachek. You're mimachek the or. And it's based on this, by the way, that we get into the problem of utilizing ointments on Shabbos. They're also a major problem. Can you use an ointment in on a baby skin, let's say, or an antibiotic ointment? This we'll see more in the Gemara. And actually, Reb Yehuda, there was a story that they showed Reb Yochanan ben Zakkai in Arab, and where he lived for quite some time, and somebody had done that. They showed it to Reb Yochanan, they asked him what the halacha is, and he said, I'm very concerned that this guy might be chayev achatas, because not that the question apparently, there's a little bit of a steer in Rashi elsewhere and Rashi here, whether it's, I'm not sure whether that's the din or I'm not sure that he did it through being mimareach. Omer of Oshaya, the Mishnah means specifically pressed figs and only pressed figs. But if they weren't pressed figs, mefuradot, you're not allowed to do that. Why are you not allowed to do it? Because you're not allowed to pick up that knife in order to cut through the top of a barrel, because that's not what knives are for. What? Mefuradot lo. Meitvei, what do you mean? It's a ferish abraita. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel omer. Mivi adam et achavicho yayin. You can bring a whole big barrel of wine. You take out a sword, and like a Japanese samurai, matiz rosha b'sayef, there you go, and you cut off the whole top of the barrel, and you put it on the next to the table for all of your guests, and wow, what a beautiful, beautiful act that is to show your guests of how much you want to give them the wine. And eno koshesh. I mean, it's like really a beautiful gesture. You don't have to worry about that on Shabbos. So you see that you are allowed to use a samurai sword to kill that barrel. Yeah, well, of course, that's the sheet of the Rabbanan. Are you forgetting that there's this whole approach of Rabbi Nehemiah who holds of the original Takana of Muktzah back from the time of Nehemiah? And one stage of that original takana was that you're only allowed to move a kli shemalachto laheter for the main purpose for which it was designed. And these things are not designed for cutting open the tops of barrels. And therefore, according to Rabbi Nehemiah, it would be usur. That's the point. Well, I don't understand. Why in the world would Rabbi Oshaya want to explain the Mishnah only like Rabbi Nehemiah and force a pshat into the Mishnah that we have to be talking about pressed figs, and since they're pressed figs, you're going to be picking up the knife anyway in order to cut through the pressed figs, and therefore you can already use the knife to open up the barrel because you were already handling the knife. I mean, isn't that a little bit far-fetched? All you need to say, it's talking about any kind of figs. They don't have to be pressed. And the reason that you're allowed to open the barrel is because why not? A knife is considered to be a kli shemalachto laheter. So what does he have to go to all of this crazy backwards way of understanding the Mishnah? Lukma b'meforadot. Say it's talking about with even loose figs, and it would be going according to Rabbanan, who say you are allowed to handle a knife, which of course, I mean, like people today barely even know Rabbi Nehemia Shita exists. Oh, my Rava, because he didn't see any other way to understand the Mishnah. He was thinking to himself, why in the world would the Mishnah tell us a din of a barrel that has figs? Who cares about figs? I mean, you could have said anything. You could have said it has in it produce. I don't know. What's the difference? I mean, if it's talking about figs, it's because there's something unique about figs. What's unique about figs is that figs found in a barrel are generally pressed figs in the barrel, which get very hard, and the only way that you're going to be able to actually serve them and use them is by taking a knife or a sword and cutting through them. So it must be that the Mishnah is going on Liban Rabbi Nehemiah, because if it were any other kind of barrel, you wouldn't be allowed to take off the top of the barrel because you wouldn't be having a kli to be doing that. That's all. So actually, it fits very nicely. Tanya Chada, and the truth is, once you understand that there's two different approaches, Bechlal, to the whole sugya. There's one which, of course, subsequently, now it bifurcates into the sheet of Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon. That's the sheet of the Chachomi, that there is such a concept of a mukta, which is limited today with the Hitiru, V'chozer V'Hitiru, V'chozer V'Hitiru. And that was the machlokas. What was the Chozer V'Hitiru in terms of the history of the Gezerah of mukta? But there's another approach in which we don't have that whole idea. There was no Chozer V'Tir, V'Chozer V'Tir, and that's the approach of Rebbe Nechemia. And once we understand that, that answers a lot of contradictions in Braita. Let me give you some other examples. There's a Braita that says like this, that if you made chotalot of these dates or of figs, so you're allowed to just loosen the ropes. These chotalot, remember, those are made out of the leaves of a palm. So because of that, they would put things in there very, very often to just ripen. We had this many times before. And so you're allowed to just untie it means it was tied with something that is not really meant to stay there. These things are, we said that they're the equivalent of our modern disposable dishes. They would just use things that just would stay for a couple of days and throw it out. So because of that, you can untie it. And for that matter, you could be mafkia, the chotech. You can take apart the ropes, or you can cut through them. So that means that since you're allowed to use of scissors on it, and yet the other braisa says you are not. You can untie it, but you cannot be mafkia, and you cannot be chotech. Why? Very simple. Because you don't have a scissors that you're allowed to use for this purpose. You can't use a knife for that purpose. Well, Kasha, or Rabban, or Rabbi Nechemi, it's not the primary purpose of the knife. And therefore, you don't have a way to do that. The Tanya, and this is, remember, Rabbi Nechemia's Shita, Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Afilo Tarvad, Afilo Talit, Afilo Sake. I don't care what we're talking about. We're talking about the most innocuous type of Kli Shemalachto Leheter. And you still have to be careful how it is that you're going to be using it. Even if it's just a talis or it's a spoon, you can't pick that up unless it's the tzorach tashmishan and it's for their special, specific purpose. Jeff, are you going to come back? It was so nice having you. Okay. So the Mishnah says that we're getting back to it. You have to be makbid not to really make a Pesach yofa on it. So now, what would be the din, let's say, about taking your spear? Now, this is a different kind of gesture. You want to take a spear and put it through the side of a barrel. So, ma'ala mivras chavita beburtia b'shabata. Would that be okay or not? My question is like this. I mean, is the point over here is that it's a gesture and like, wow, that was really beautiful. It takes it, pow, wow, the wine's going to pour out and everybody's going to be able to take it and so on. So he's just doing it for effect? Or is the real intent because he wants to basically make a petach? And it's the fact that maybe people take it as a gesture, I mean, but that's his intent is to make a petach. And therefore, instead of taking off the top, maybe he doesn't want the top to be on off because maybe dirt will get in or flies will get in. So he's bedavka choosing this way because this is the only way that he's going to get the wine out of the barrel. But you're not allowed to complete a barrel by making a petach. Or it's li'ayin yafa kamecha. I mean, is he just doing this gesture to show his guests, look at this, I'm opening it all up for you. My wine is your wine. Amar lohu said Reb Sheshes, we have to assume that the purpose is a petach. So they asked him from the brayta we had before, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, mevi adam chavicho yayin, and you can just take a sword and be matiz rosho, cut straight through the top. And why is there a difference between a sword or a spear? I mean, it seems to be the same type of gesture, no? No, over there, of course it's an ayin yaf. I mean, what else is the point? But over here, if really all that he wanted to do was to show how generous he is with his wine, I mean, it might be a better idea to open the barrel, like, you know, just pull off the top and then you can get out as much wine as you want. You could put in, you know, your ladles and mix it with your punch. I mean, whatever. Putting a sword through the side may be a phony gesture, you know. You see if you can get enough wine out of this hole. So, I mean, it doesn't look to me like it's a really important way to be generous. Now, the next thing said, you can't put a hole, according to Rabbi Yehuda, through the actual meguf asachovich, which is the bung. According to the Chachamim, it's mutter, but everybody agrees you can't do it in the side, meaning you can't do it. What's it? Is that putting a side, a hole through the side of the bung where the barrel comes to a top? Or does it mean the side of the barrel? Omer Ravuna, the whole machlokas over here is on the top of the barrel, meaning that the hole is through the side of the bung. But if it was in the side of the barrel itself, everybody would be moda that it's usher, because putting a hole in the side of the bung is really weird. I mean, if you want to get the wine out of the top of the barrel, then take off the bung. I mean, it doesn't really make sense. You're making a hole over here, and if you just put it to the top, right, it doesn't make sense. But if you put it to the side, now that could make sense, because what you would want to do maybe is have a small hole, which would be something like a spout, and that way you wouldn't be able to have dirt falling in, and that would be very useful. So maybe there's a difference. That's what the Mishnah is referring to. And then it follows directly. Don't put a hole through the bung, alibet Rabbi Yehuda. And the Chachamim reminded that don't put a hole through the side of the bung also, even the Rabbanan. Whereas Rav Chisda says, no. We're not talking about the bung anymore. We're talking about, over here, Machloket Minatzat, Avot Al-Gabad Divrei HaKol Mutter. Everybody agrees that the top of the bung, the Chachamim weren't arguing on Rabbi Yehuda. Dafka, the whole original discussion in the Mishnah about whether you could make a hole in the bung, was the hole in the side of the bung. No. That's not what the Mishnah's talking about now, Minatzida, because that was the first part of the Mishnah. But the meaning of the words in the Mishnah that says lo yikvena mitzida means the side of the barrel, doesn't mean of the bung. That was the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda, also was us. Hasam begufa de chavit. So if you put it in the side of the barrel itself, then there's already a problem in which it's something that you would definitely make a sort of a place to flow from the side. That's mamish making a kli. Tana Rabbana, eino kvim nekev chadash b'shabbat. You're not allowed to make a hole that is not there from before. But if you want to just add a little bit to a hole that's already there, you can do that. But some say you can't even do that. But everybody agrees that if there was a hole that you sealed up, that then you'd be allowed to reopen it. So the question is, what's the logic of saying that you can make the old hole bigger, but you can't make a new hole? I mean, it seems to me exactly the same. If you can't make a new hole, why is that? To come attacking Pinscha. I mean, because basically you are now doing that makabe patish of finishing up a useful barrel. But that's true even if you just make it larger, because if you make it larger, then you're also, obviously, you needed a larger hole, so then you're being attacking the Pinscha. Omar Rabba, let me explain to you. The connection to Binyan, which is obviously what all of this is predicated on, is that what it is that we're doing with the kli is the type of thing which is shayach to binyan or to makabe patish. Now, it's got to be there for something that is the same as the way we would deal with actual binyan. In terms of actual binyan, an opening is meant to go both ways. You got to be able to let things out. You got to be able to let things in. If you make a one-way opening whose purpose is serving only one direction, that is not called a petach midioraita. Okay? The Rabbanan asserted making even that kind of petach. Why? Because they figured that there is a place where it's very possible that a person will make a mistake. We had this before. You have a chicken coop. Now, the chicken coop is completely sealed, okay, and that doesn't allow air into the chicken. So the guy wants to allow air in. So if he's going to be semech on the diraisa, he will make a hole in the chicken coop, which will allow air in. And it's okay, so all I'm doing is allowing air in. Nothing can get out of this. But he's wrong, because what he doesn't realize is that you need to have an exchange of gases. And there's absolutely, if you don't open up that chicken coop, even if there's enough oxygen in there, there is sufficient waste gases and methane and so on that they're all going to die. And therefore, you have to let that out, not only let in oxygen. And because of that, what you're really doing is, honest to God, diraisa petach. So because of that, the Rabbanit said, listen, people are not smart enough to figure out whether something is really lachlis v'lahotzi. So therefore, we answered even making Pesach that are one directional, right? And the Rabbanit were goes there because of the problem of a lul shel tarnagolim, which actually is liyulei avira v'lafukei avla. It's made to bring in oxygen and to let out gases. But im bala hosif, however, if you want to add to an existing hole, the Rabbanan didn't gozer because of the tarnagolas. Why? Because people do not add. They're worried about adding to the lul shel tarnagolim, lo atila suvi, because you have a very delicate balance over there, because there's a lot of things that are dangerous to chicks that can crawl in through a hole that's too big. And because of that, it's unlikely that somebody's going to come to be mosif on a tarnagolet coop, mishum riksha, because he's worried about things creeping in there. Okay, and now why does the other Tana say it's usher? Yeshomrim ain't mosif. Look, I mean, because it could certainly happen that the guy realizes that his original hole was, he sees the chickens are still not doing well and they seem to be choking, so he realizes he didn't let in enough air. So he'll go ahead and it'll be mosif. Again, that hosafa will be a real Pesach because it's going to work in both ways. So because of that, we have to be gozer, even Tosefus, according to that. Okay, so the question is how prevalent, how much do we have to be choshish for something like that? Dorash Reb Nachman Mishum Reb Yochanan, the halacha is ki yesh omrim, that we assert both expansion of an existing hole and the creation of a new hole. Yeah. However, yeah. 1 minute. Yeah. Whoa. Whew. This is a real Barnea drink. Let me tell you. Sorry?
What are people going to eat today for Tisha B'Av? People need a suda today to prepare for the tainus. Not everybody has the money for a suda to prepare for the tainus.
Ah, you must be in a Barnea warp. We spoke about that. Yes, but it's very nice to speak of it again. What are poor people supposed to eat? Actually, after the tainus is where we give the real tzedakah, right? That's the Einayim shel Aniyim is Nesuim. Okay, but we certainly will accept those donations today. So just let me know. Okay, so we said in the Braita that everybody's motive, both the Chachomim and Reb Yudah, you can open up an old hole. Om Reb Yudah Omer Shmuel, what do you mean by an old hole? I mean, Lo Shama V'Mokom Osir L'Shamer. We're talking about the type of hole which was only there to prevent air from getting into the barrel. Okay, so what do you do that? You could put in a cork. You know, as you put in a cork, taking out the cork is not starting something new. But if you made it in a place where it has to actually keep the barrel closed in terms of water tightness, so it's below the surface of the wine, now that's already serious. And there you wouldn't be allowed to take it out because you needed to make it so strong that it would be considered to be an actual stima. When you say to be mishamer and you say to be mechazek, can you just explain to me, hechidomi l'shamer and hechidomi l'chazek, like what exactly do you mean? Well, Rav Chista is very simple. If it's above the level of the wine, so then that is just there in order to prevent the the delicious aroma of the wine from dissipating, okay? But if it's lamatum and ayayin, then you're dealing with waterproofing. That's to be mechazik, the actual chavis. Rava says, no, I don't agree. I think even if it's a little bit beneath the wine, the level of the wine, that's not going to have much pressure on it. And that doesn't have to be so beautifully sealed. When it says lechazek, that's talking about where it's on the bottom of the barrel. On the bottom of the barrel, there you've got the pressure of the whole barrel on it. And over there, if you needed to seal up the bottom of the barrel, that must be a very serious plug. And because of that, you would not be allowed to open it. Omalei Abaye. Larava. Actually, there's a brayta that seems to be saying what it is that you said, Rava, and that in order for something to be considered to be sealed, it's got to be like there's no sign basically left of what was originally there. Because the shaila is like this: when you are a partner in a chotzer and you want to split with the other people. So there's all types of dinim that have to do about how much parking space each one of the houses gets automatically. So one of the dinim is that for every door that opens directly into the chatzar, we have to provide a parking area because people generally will pull their car up to the house, unload their groceries into the door, and to have a door without being able to pull up by the door is not considered to have the full tashmish of the house. So one of the ways that we do it is we have arba amos from the door along the entire width of the door as parking. All right, so now the question is, what if a guy had closed up one of the doors of his house? And now they come to split the chotzer. Does he get a right to that door? Now note that this is very similar to the question of the chavis. Is opening up an old door assumed to be something that is not really making something new? Or at what point would it be something new? And it says in the Braita, very much like what Rava said, and it says over there that if you closed up the bayit, you still get four amos in front of that door. But only if you actually were paratz et betzimav, so you tore out entirely all of what was originally the framing for the door, and then you close it up. Oh, now that is a tight seal. And it's, okay, that's very similar to what Rava was saying about having something that's lechazek. It's got to be exactly as strong as the actual barrel itself. At that point, and only at that point, do you lose your arba amos. Is another issue also over here, and that is the question of whether a body is going to be removed from a house. So the halacha is that as long as there is a door, we don't treat the house in which the mace is as a mausoleum that he's going to be left in there. It's not considered to be a grave. But if he actually had sealed up the door, so then it would have been metame the way within arba amas, it's metame the size. So a bayit satum eno metame kosavivav. So just because you closed up the door, that does not give you a din of an actual kever. And if you took it off, however, parts of Pitzimav, then it is Matamikos Vivav. So again, you see where Rava was saying that only a really completely strong seal is considered to be a total seal. Anyway, you said that we're allowed maybe to make it a little larger. Can I make improvements? In other words, let's say I have a hole that's already there. Okay, but I'd like to actually be able to pour through the hole and make the equivalent of either a spigot or maybe even to have something I can open and close. So I want to put in a straw through it. Okay, once I put the straw through it, now I can pour the wine out through the straw. I don't have to take the barrel and move it all the way. Is that mutter or not? Is that considered to also be a binyan for kalim? So this is a machlokas. Rav holds it's usher. Shmuel says it's mutter. Now look, to cut a straw, meaning a reed, which is a straw, cut it lechatchila, everybody's mutter. You can't do that because then you're being metakenakli in terms of the straw. to put a straw back, again, when I say straw, I mean in this case a reed that is a straw, to put it back in when it was already there, well, why not? I mean, everybody's mother, you can do that. The question over here is, you've got a cut reed, but you never actually had inserted this reed into the barrel and made sure that it fits and so on. So, so if you're telling me that it's usher like Rav, that's because it's a gezera. We're afraid that if it won't fit perfectly, you'll go ahead and you'll cut it, and then you'll be over and be metakein. Whereas Manda, sure, he said, okay, yeah, you'll push it in. Logazvin, it makes such a gezera. And it appears that that is a machlokas tanoim, actually, because when we're talking about yontev, it says, in chotrin shvofer beyontev, you can't cut a reed to size to fit into a hole in a barrel. Ein tzarich lomer b'shabbat, for sure not on Shabbos. If it fell out of the barrel, it was already there, you can put it back even on Shabbos, and for sure on Yontev, and Rabbi Yoshia is Mekel. What do you mean Rabbi Yoshia is Mekel? What's that referring to, Rabbi Yoshia is Mekel? I mean, he certainly couldn't be Mekel to say that you're allowed to cut a reed and to be Metakein. That for sure is Metakein Mona. How in the world would Rabbi Yoshia be Matir that? If you're saying that Rabbi Yoshia is Mekel, where the reed was already cut, which is the Seifa, everybody was Mekel. So what he told me, Rabbi Yoshia is Mekel. Tanakama was also Matir that. Therefore, I can infer that there is a hidden machlokas over here, and that hidden machlokas, I say, is the machlokas that we had over here, Rav and Shmuel, which is you had the tube cut, but you did not actually put it in to see that it was, that it fits. Well, so Marso Begazrin or Marso Begazrin, which is exactly the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel. Wow. Dorash, Rav Shisha, Bereda, Ravidi, Mishmele, Rav Yochanan. We actually paskin like Rav Yoshia, said Rav Yochanan. And even if you hadn't tested it before, you can put that piece of reed or the shvoferet, whatever the shvoferet, usually shvoferet shulkana, as a tube, the same idea, you could put it into your barrel. If you had a hole there before and you want to close it up, says the Mishnah, you can't use wax. Okay, I understand you can't use wax because then I'm going to be actually mimachek, right? I'm going to be over on mimareach, which is a total mimachek on orot. Now, I mean, what about like ointments? Not wax. Wax is hard. And when you're mimachek, it is very similar to be mimachek or. But I mean, what about putting on like some type of, what do you call that? How do you say mishkan in English? Ointment, yeah. So can you use like an ointment, hardened, which is a hardened oil kind of thing? I mean, it's softish. It's not really something that's going to hold the smoothness that you gave it. Would that be mutter or not? So mishcha, Rav Aser's mishcha, and Shmuel is mater mishcha. So mandi azrakas yinu mishum shava. Rav said that this was a gezeira, because if we allow you to use a mishcha, you may end up coming to use something which is much more similar to real mimachek, and you might even come to use wax. Whereas mandi azshori, Shmuel said, lo gazrina. You told us beferish, actually, that Rav says that Mishcha is shori. You claim that Rav was matir using this. We paskin, like Rav, according to the Lashon, that it was usher. Because of that, we have all of this problem of what we do for antibiotic ointments or for diaper rash and so on in order to avoid being mimareach. So, you know, summer matir, in those circumstances, just putting on globs of mishcha and then allowing it to melt from body heat or from the diaper, if you're putting a diaper on a child, and not to actually be mimachek with your hands. Omar tavot rishpa, omar shmul haitar fadaasa, daasa osar. I just want you to know something, that he was a trapper, Tavos. You cannot use a myrtle, a hadassah leaf, as a wine. And by the way, people, You know, they sell this, right? I'm sure you've seen it, right? Where it's basically like a little piece that is it's made out of metal, but it jumps back into its shape. And then if you curl it up and you put it into the top of the wine, so then the wine actually flows very nicely through it. I forgot what it's called. They're popular. So what they used in those days for that was a hadassah, which has a strong leaf, beautiful smooth leaf. But when you bend the leaf of the hadassah, it flips back out. So if you take the hadassah and you put it into the barrel in order to use as a wine pourer, that you're not allowed to do setavot rishpa, even though we said that you're allowed to do it with the reed. And that's because when it comes to the hadassah, you're going to need to curl it a bit. And the needing to curl it is like a tikkun. Where you're talking about the reed, if the reed fits, then the reed fits. I mean, you're not going to be able to make it into a straw. It is a straw. But over here, you're going to have to make the hadassah into a proper marzev. So you're basically going to making a gutter for something. My taima says, Rabbi Amram Midifti, it's because of the gezera of a marzev. So people will think that you're allowed to actually do that. You're allowed to actually take a piece of metal and turn it into a marzev by bending it a little bit. And that would actually be a tikkun kli. Ravashi says, that's not the reason. The reason is because you're going to use a leaf. Then what's going to stop you from picking the leaf? I mean, it's right there in front of you. Well, my benayu. The difference is very simple. If you've got a bunch of leaves that you already picked, right, and they're sitting in your kitchen, so can you take it and form it and put it into the bottle or not? Okay. How about padding? Beisadia. So beisadia, the norm was then that they would use felt and would sit on it. You know, it was very convenient. You carried around this little pad. Either if something was dirty, you would spread the felt pad on it. If something was hard, you could fold it, sit on it, and make yourself a little seat. So it's basically a portable seat that you always had available for you. And the question is, are you allowed to put it on you to use as a beged? And then when you arrive, you turn it into a pad and you sit on it. So Rav says no. You cannot actually wear it to carry in Rosh Hashanah. And Shmuel is matir. Now, if you're talking about the really soft padding of felt, everybody's matir that you can wear that because that is actually used as a beged too. Why not? If you're talking about something that is very stiff, I mean, then if it's stiff, it's definitely phony to try to wear it. Kulei amalo pligi de aser ki pligi, where the machlokas is where it's between those two things. It's not really soft, but it's not stiff. So mandi aser mirse kemasoi. So Rav holds, look, it's too similar to carrying. It doesn't look like a piece of clothing when it's not really soft. Whereas Shmuel says it, who's going to think it's not clothing? It looks like clothing. V'hada Rav, lav beferishit. When Rav said that, it wasn't that he said it beferish, that it's aser. It was learned. Sorry about that. It was learned from a Maisa Shahaya, because remember we had that time, we had this story where there wasn't enough room for the Talmidim to sit down and everything, and they went out to a Carmelite. So Rav once came to a place where there wasn't place for people to sit. He was going to give a shir. When it meant that everybody was going to be sitting on the ground. So what happened was that some Talmidim came and brought him beisadia. They brought him this piece of padding. And he refused to sit on it. So everybody that was there assumed, okay, why did he refuse to sit on it? Because he felt they shouldn't have brought it out from the house into this Carmelite, okay? But that was a mistake. That was not the reason that he wasn't willing to sit on it. The reason he didn't want to sit on it is, and we know it's not true, because Rav, there was a time that he gave a drush, and he said, Beferish, Rav Achruzi Machriz, that Beisadia is shori, that it's actually mutter to do that. The reason that he didn't do it is mishum kvod rabotenu. It's because of the other rabbanim, our rabbanim, that he didn't sit on it because he was the only one that they had brought it out for. And he didn't feel right sitting. He's the only guy that's sitting on a pad. And there's a lot of choshuva people there besides him. And they're sitting on the ground. And he didn't think that was right. Well, I mean, who was that? Well, it's interesting. It actually is a reference to Talmidim of Rav. It's his own Talmidim. So why do we call them Rabotenu? We call them Rabotenu because he was Mechabit, his Talmidim, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, because they got to the point where they became such Chachomim as Talmidim of Rav, he viewed them as Talmid Chover. And once he viewed them as Talmid Chover, so he refused to sit down if they weren't sitting down. Because of that, we made a mistake in assuming that Rav was Asar. That was the point. Now, I got to tell you a story I can't resist, that my grandfather, Zatzal, my paternal grandfather, made millions of dollars on this Gemara. Absolutely amazing story. Totally based on this Gemara. Because it comes out, according to this Gemara, that you can use felt as a baguette, right? Now, in modern terms, people do not use felt as begonim. They use felt for making hats. Now, it happened to be that the suppliers before the Second World War of felt were only two countries that had an industry of textiles that was making felt in commercial quantity. And that was Germany and Japan. Now, Germany and Japan were not exactly able to provide felt during the Second World War. So, it's like a crazy story. So, my grandfather comes up with this idea that immediately after the ceasefire or the surrender, he and my uncle actually went to Japan and went to Germany at that time and visited every single factory of felt in both of those countries and made a contract to buy up all of their felts on condition that they cannot sell to anybody else. So he got with my uncle a monopoly, a worldwide monopoly on commercially available felts. This is absolutely amazing. So what is he going to do with the worldwide supply of felts? This is the genius. Since the Gemara says that it's considered to be Derech Malbush, he hired, and you're talking about a Hasidish Yid, you understand? A Hasidish Yid from Eretz Yisrael, who had come to America before the First World War because he had to run away. And he hires the best of women's clothes designers to design a full, beautiful range of fall clothing out of felt. And then he goes and he sells this idea to Macy's. And he gives Macy's a monopoly on all of this beautiful felt clothing. And of course, the only place the dress manufacturers are going to get this felt clothing is from him. And Macy's went for it in a big way. They took out momish two-page spreads in the New York Times with this unbelievable new fall idea of felt dresses. And it was amazing. So I still remember the smells. One time they asked my father to go to Japan to do like one of the negotiation things. When he came back from Japan, I mean, like the stuff, this was old Japan still, right? Just like right after the war, everything had that, I can't forget that smell. Everything had that Japanese smell of all the stuff that he bought for us. Mamish, take a Gemara, less midi de la remisa biaraisa. It's a fantastic story. What's more horrible is how they lost it all, but we'll talk about that some other time. That has to do with Tisha B'Av, actually.